Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, September 14th, 2013. This is episode 1013. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is the reliable domain name registration and management service that's simple, honest, and easy to use. For exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain name, visit hover.com/techguy. Don't forget to use the offer code TechGuy. You know, whatever mood I'm in, when I hear this happy-go-lucky theme, I just perk up because it's time for the Tech Guy show. I do. It gets me in the mood to answer questions about computers, the internet, and home theater, and smartphones, and all that stuff. It just puts me in a mood. It's bouncy, happy-go-lucky music. Thank you to Ashley Witt, who composed that many moons ago, 2004, I think.
It is damn catchy.
And then, you know, we had a little remix competition. I can't remember the name of the guy who remixed it, but he did a great job. It's bouncy. Effin Dunn in our chat room says, I have this as my ringtone. That's cool.
I listen to it in my car.
I can't have it as my ringtone because then I would be bouncy a lot. I don't want to be bouncy. My ringtone is the James Bond theme because then I feel spy-ish.
Oh, nice. Ba-da-ba-da.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Huh?
I got the Stones.
Rolling Stones? Yeah, I used to have Start Me Up. That's a good one.
Can you hear me knocking? Get it?
Yeah.
Knocking on your phone, yeah. Heather, pick it up.
Do you assign different ringtones for... We're talking to Heather Hammond, who is the phone ranger, by the way, in case you're wondering, who's his voice? Because you're relatively new to the show. You've only been here for a few months. But long-time call screener for the Dean Adell show. We snagged her in a trade for a player to be named later. And we're thrilled. She's stepped right up. The best draft pick we've ever made. So do you have different ringtones for different people? She's Kaepernicking right now.
It's so lame, but for all my girlfriends,
yeah,
all the single ladies.
That's good.
But that
put a ring on it.
Yeah.
Little Beyonce.
Everybody else gets Can You Hear Me Knocking, or my mom gets Do the Panic. I don't know why.
I think it cost me my last marriage because I think I had some sort of rooster crowing when Jennifer called me.
Cluck, 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 cluck.
And the chicken. It wasn't the right. You can really insult people with picking the wrong ringtone for them. And so you don't want them to find out. And yet, it's so handy because it's kind of a mnemonic. You know,
right.
When you hear the song, you know, you make me feel like a natural woman. It's one person. When I'm not going to tell anybody what I have for my different ringtones, but...
Okay.
Lisa's got Madonna's Material Girl.
Oh, shoot.
She would be mad at that.
Not like a virgin?
Getting me in trouble now. So I think it's kind of fun. It's... Effin Dunn says his partner's ringtone is a dog barking. See... That seems to me trouble.
Unless it's, well, never mind.
Oh, Archandra has a good suggestion in our chat room. Who can it be now?
Yeah.
Who can it be now? I look for, Rusty Bone says, his wife was offended because he has the Dick Van Dyke theme song for her.
Well, that's cute.
Ah, he trips over the ottoman.
And Mary Tyler Moore's there, all adorable and capri pants.
Yes.
I mean, come on.
I think that's not an insult. That's love. That's true love. Do you think, though, that could be in a cause of action in a divorce for, you know, insulting ringtone?
For sure.
Only in California, my friends. No, I think that, you know, I think we've stumbled upon an interesting topic here.
Yes, we have.
I like a ringtone. You know, I have to say that people, I think the... Other people don't like your ringtone. Not you personally, but just your whoever's, right? People don't want these elaborate ringtones. It's annoying.
Okay, I think
I see what
you're meaning. Saying.
Yeah. You like your ringtone, but nobody else does. Whoever you might
be.
They're
jealous that you're getting a phone call and they're not.
Oh, you think that's it?
I don't know.
Zero says that a good, you really want to insult your spouse? The Imperial March from dum 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 bum 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 bum. It's Darth Vader's comment calling.
And then there's a
phone call for you.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
All the tones that the phone comes with.
No, those are all terrible.
Yeah, they're horrible. And there's one that I used as my wake up, Heather, tone. And then if someone's phone goes off
then
using that,
you wake
it
up.
Bums me out.
It's time to get up.
There's nothing worse than waking up.
No, I don't use a... You shouldn't... I think you made a little tactical error there with your ringtone, your alarm. The reason I'm thinking
it.
Of that is because Apple's new iPhones are out. And the iconic Apple ringtone... The marimba is still the ringtone. But don't you, when you hear somebody with the default ringtone, don't you kind of, in your mind, maybe it's just me, think, newbie.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
You haven't changed it, huh? Guess you don't know how to use your phone.
Add a little something in iTunes and throw it on there.
I think the first thing a ringtone should be is it should have a good, it should work. Because, you know, a lot of song, you know, okay, here's another one, Bites the Dust, right? Dum, dum, dum. It's a bass tone. Dum, dum. You won't hear that in your purse or pocket. Because it doesn't have enough edge. It has to be a little annoying. You know what's good is The Who's Baba O'Reilly. That's really annoying. But, okay, here's another example. Stephen Dolan in the chat room says, the Nokia tone. People do 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 do.
Oh God, that's dated.
When you hear that, not only do you know somebody's like not with it, but they have a really old phone.
True that.
But what's worse, a musical ringtone or a ringtone that talks? You know what the worst one is, and they have these, is the ones that go pick up the phone, pick up the phone, pick up the phone.
Terrible.
That's annoying. That is really annoying. Nokia recently remixed their ringtone for the more recent Nokia phones. And I frankly don't like it as well. Here we go. This is the remix. This is on the Nokia Lumia 928.
It's on all of them.
But it's on all of them. Here's the, thank you. Boy, I tell you, you're right on it here, Alex Gumpel, who is a Windows phone user. This is the remix that they did. Is that not the most...
That
so annoying.
Out.
Alex is his head hung.
It's all auto-tuned.
It's awful.
It sounds like, ugh. Ooh, bad.
That feels like it's kind of dated. But yet, I think that's an effective...
They're hitting some weird high notes I don't like.
Well, those high notes are important because what high notes
said.
Do is they get your attention. What do you use, Alex, on here? Which one?
Lattice or something on the top.
The top here. Let's see. See, Verizon, and that's the other thing, is the Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, and Sprint all have their own themes, right? So they put their tone, like, here's the Verizon.
The thing from the commercial.
It's going to be the thing from the commercial. I'm doing it. I screwed it up.
Uh-oh. Do you want to hear what
I just made your ringtone be Verizon. You'll have to set it back now, Alex. I apologize. That's terrible. I've ruined your...
Oh, that one I
kind of
like.
It's not bad. It's because it's classic rock.
It sounds... Yeah, I forget what song it's.
You have Lattice. Here's... That's not bad.
That's nice.
So you'd hear that. It's not annoying. I don't think the people around you would go, oh, stop it. Is my James Bond theme, you think, annoying? Do you think that's an annoying...
I don't think so. Play it real quick.
I
have to play you my alarm. You'll love it, I think.
Okay, let's hear the alarm.
Okay, ready? Where did I put it now?
You can tell we've prepared. Oh, that's good. The Beatles.
Oh, my God. I mean,
what a great way to wake up.
Do something?
And wouldn't you want to answer the phone when this happens? Actually, when this happens, do you want to answer the phone, but you want to have a martini, shaken, not stirred. And see, I've spent way too much time thinking about this. This, to me, has the perfect elements of a great ringtone. It starts quietly.
Mm-hmm.
So you can notice it maybe in your pocket, or you can get it before it gets annoying. But then it starts to get more annoying and more annoying and more annoying. And I think that's a ringtone. Perfect ringtone. We've wasted enough time. I think we should go to the phones right after this.
Yes.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is a good ringtone. I can't use my own music or sounders because then I feel like I'm on the air.
Well, if you hear this, you'll know to be quiet.
I go, and then I stop talking. When I used to have Bob Sarlat, remember Bob Sarlat, great comedian. Bob Sarlat used to be a regular on the radio show. And I used to play his, whenever he came on the radio show, I'd play the Letterman theme because he was a regular, in those days, he was a regular comic on Letterman. And he begged me to stop. He's like, I start sweating every time I hear that. It scared him. So he said, please don't.
So I've got the tech guy theme on my Zoom in the car. So and when it's on shuffle, every once in a while it comes up. And the,
right.
My brain.
Yeah, it's like time to go. Oh, the show's on. Yeah. I could never have the tech guy theme as my ringtone. It just would have that.
So putting like my favorite music as a ringtone, though, I'm afraid to do that because
then it'll ruin the song.
Right.
Yeah, it's Pavlovian. Yeah, you know, yeah. No, it'll ruin the song. But that's why James Bond, I don't mind that.
Now Leo, I don't consider myself a noob, but...
Do you still have the note? Oh.
I've never even considered it because...
What's your ringtone?
I don't know. I never turned
off. He never gets calls. Oh, well, your phone's...
And I keep it turned off.
So, well, no wonder I can never reach you when I need to.
Well, yeah.
Turn your phone on.
Well, so there we go. So I should have the tech guy theme be your ringtone.
Okay, here's a stock Galaxy S2. Yeah, then if you hear it, you'll jump, won't you? I'm reconditioning this for Lisa's son. It's going to be his first phone. I wonder what the Galaxy S2's default is. This is on Sprint, so it's probably a Sprint sound, right? Yeah, over the horizon. The problem with most of this music is it's bad music. It sounds like... that music we play in the breaks. Because it's like studio musicians who have been brought in to play something that sounds like music, vaguely sounds like music, but isn't really. Yeah, there you go. In Daba Music, that's where we had the remix. Thank you. In fact, that should have the guy's name, right? And don't we have it on the wiki? MDL Productions. That's who did it.
We got great calls right off the top.
Yeah, this is the one we use. So that's a remix by MDL Productions. And this is MDL Productions. Oh, no. This guy is... Winner of the Indaba Music Leo Laporte Tech Guy Theme Song Contest, Jackie Boys he produces Jackie Boys. Vote for my Mariah remix here. Credit where credit is due. Yeah, we should put both on the wiki. If we don't have that on the wiki, I should get that up there. Carrier provides ringtones and the factory provides ringtones almost always. So here's the Moto ringtone. Let's see if I can find it. I use also this as a ringtone a lot.
Beautiful.
Is that nice? It rings. Do you know who that is?
Okay, thanks.
Do.
Hang on a
you
second.
You seem like the type that would know that.
Oh, this hell is the, yeah. It made me angry that I haven't listened to that record.
Isn't that
in
a great
long,
record?
Actually.
Avalon from
it's the best.
Roxy Music. Here's
Beginning
Moto.
Boom, boom. Boom, boom.
I don't know.
I don't know if that's default or not, but that's the Moto
that?
ringtone. That's
think
from
I've ever
the
heard
Moto
it.
X ringtone.
Oh, it came with it.
Yeah. This is a good ringtone. This would be an excellent ringtone because of the... It builds.
Yeah. And the bagpipes come in, right?
Yeah. Perfect ringtone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay, I do have a request when it comes to ringtones. It's really a notification tone. If you have a Droid, See, isn't that good? That sounds like the ringtone. I think that's a good one with a Mac Bagley. There, if you have a Droid, please don't have it say Droid. Nope, the most annoying thing in the world. You're in a concert. Worst, you're in like a school recital, and you're Droid. Hate that. Here is on the Moto X, there is Moto. Motorola provides a ringtone, which is truly horrible. Truly the worst I've ever heard. It's one of those, pick up the phone.
That is horrible.
Yeah, you would change that. I think they did it on purpose so that you change it right away. And then AT&T has to step in. Yeah, AT&T has to step in with this. This is AT&T Firefly. This is when you get it from AT&T, the default. See? That's the AT&T jingle. So I don't like to announce that I'm using an AT&T phone.
Right, it's just another ad for them.
It's not a bad ringtone, but I don't want to give
it's
them
like
an
ad. It's like wearing a Nike t-shirt. Like, why would...
Yeah, this is... I've always thought good, but it's kind of annoying. You'll know this immediately. So that would be a good ringtone, wouldn't it? Baba O'Reilly by The Who. Huh? John, who is the biggest music aficionado in the world, my studio engineer John Slonina, he says, I never. Not only do I not change the ringtone, I don't even know what it is because I never use. What do you? Nobody calls you, or no? You just you have it turned off all the time. But wasn't Apple inspired because that marimba is so iconic, and they knew that most people. I bet you 50% of people get a new phone never change the ringtone. They just use whatever the phone came with. And that, it's pleasant, it's nice. It isn't, doesn't sound like an ad, but it's the same thing as white earbuds. Another smart marketing move. Mm. Everybody else was making black earbuds. Apple made them white. Of course, it means a lot of people got mugged in the New York City subway because they were wearing white headphones, but it definitely was a statement. And even later in their advertising, remember, they'd have the people dancing and they'd be silhouettes, but you'd see the white headphones, you knew they had an iPhone. I don't have my iPhone here with me, so I can't play the marimba for you.
Oh, I got it.
Do you?
But it'll take me a while to find it again.
You go in settings, general sounds.
Oh, right. Zounds.
Frankie in the chat room says, my ringtone is, why did I buy this stupid ringtone by Weird Al? This is, you hear this, you know what it is. But it's not bad. I like that. That's the default iPhone marimba. So is this yours? Yeah. So John never changed it.
Okay.
So you're one of the 50%. Apple noted that 50% of people who use iPhones, and I guess Apple knows this magically. One might wonder how. Don't set a password on their iPhone. Do you set a password on your iPhone?
I didn't for a long time, but then
I encouraged
Tech
you.
X agree got me into it.
Good. Yeah, set it. Well, anyway, we'll talk about that. I should take some calls. You said there were excellent calls, so let's get to it. Let's get to it. Who should I talk to first?
I can't believe it. Like, lucky number one, my favorite call so far.
Is Brett in Valencia. Yeah. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Leo. Great to listen to your show.
Thank you. Welcome.
I used to listen to Heather when she was on Dr. Dina Dell's show.
There you go. Nurse Heather.
Nurse Heather. Well, you called her the Phone Ranger a while ago, and I had an old joke for you.
Okay.
Where does the Lone Ranger take his trash?
I don't know where.
To the dump, to the dump, to the dump.
Hey, that'd be a good ringtone. Da-dump, 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 da-dump. Get you going.
Yep. That's true. Well, speaking of phones, the reason I called is I'm going to Paris in a couple weeks to film a pilot for a TV show.
Wow. Are you in front of or behind the camera?
Oh, behind, definitely behind.
Way behind. Hey, but that's a good gig. How long are you going to be there?
2 weeks.
Fantastic. It's a pilot, huh?
It's a pilot. There's a, maybe you know of her, there's a mystery writer named Kara Black.
Yeah.
Lives up for you. And we're going to do a travel show based on her mysteries.
Oh, what a good idea. So you get to go to a different city, like Paris, each time, and there's a mystery.
Yes. Each episode will have a mystery taking place in a different part of Paris.
Love that. Oh, it'll always be in Paris.
Yes. Yeah, because all our books are placed there. And we'll go underground into the quarries. And
oh, what fun.
To the cafe where Hemingway went, things like
that. Oh, what fun.
But my my issue is I don't know what to do for a cell phone there. If I should just get a simple phone for just making calls, I have a feeling I'm going to need to text and be on the internet.
I think you want data. Whenever I go to Paris, I sounds like I go a lot, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I wish. I usually pay for data through AT&T, which is my carrier, and it's expensive, but there are such huge advantages to have a map. So you can get lost in Paris and then fire up Google Maps. It not only knows where you are, you can say, how do I take the metro back to my hotel? And it literally has the metro route. Or a walking route or a driving route. And so that's fabulous, especially considering that Paris cabbies sometimes have the tendency to ignore one. Especially if it's raining or snowing. They just roll up their windows and have a cigarette and they don't look at you. So you can't just take a cab home. You got to find your way home. It's also searching for restaurants. Zagat Guides, which is back now. Google bought them, but they're back as an app. It does have Paris. And it's very reliable. There's so many reasons why having data is useful. So there's two ways to go with this. The expensive way, which is what I did, it's certainly the convenient way. If you're only going to be in town for a little while, it's not such a bad idea. 2 weeks is probably the limit. That is to go to your carrier and say, I want an international data plan. Do not do this without doing that, because data roaming is very expensive. We've heard so many stories of people with $10,000 cell phone bills, literally in a week or two, because they forgot.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen.
At the very minimum, go into your settings and turn off data roaming. Those are the two magic words. That means it won't do data outside of your normal place. It'll do it in the U.S., but it won't do it outside the U.S. And that's what you want, unless you go to your carrier and say, "I want a plan." Are you on? Who are you on?
I'm on Verizon.
Oh, that's another issue. Because Verizon is Verizon and Sprint are using an older technology called CDMA, which is not compatible with the French cell phone service. So you either have to have a Verizon World phone. Many of you do, and the iPhone is a World phone. Which phone do you have on Verizon?
I have a Samsung, and I don't remember which one it is.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a World phone. So if it's not, it means it doesn't have the frequency bands, the radio, to actually work. So if that's the case, you can either go to Verizon and say, I'm traveling, I want a world phone. A really good world phone, frankly, from Verizon is the iPhone 5 or the new one if you're leaving after the 20th. Because, and actually, I don't know if they're going to do this with the new one. They did it with the 5, so maybe stick with the 5. When you get an iPhone 5 from Verizon, it is a CDMA phone, but it's also uses the international technology GSM. And that means it has a SIM chip. And lo and behold, Verizon hasn't locked that. That means you can put another carrier's SIM chip in your Verizon iPhone 5, and now you're local. So that's the second way to do this, which is to have an unlocked phone. Locked means you can only use it on your own carrier. Have an unlocked phone, and then when you get to the foreign land you're visiting, buy a data card, a SIM and data card there. I'll tell you the pros and cons of that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is the 5S going to be international? Will it be unlocked? Do we know? This is a Johnny Jet call. But it's going to be Scott Wilkinson in the house.
Hey,
Scotty. So you're coming up Thursday.
I am. Can't wait.
So excited. You know, you could stay at my place if you wanted.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I actually have a buddy who lives about 10 miles down the road.
Okay.
I've already
You're more than welcome to do that.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm throwing Abby out. Otherwise, I wouldn't, because she doesn't want strange men staying in the house with her.
But, no, I would imagine
she's,
not.
She's going back to us. She's going to stay with Jennifer while I'm gone. So,
okay.
Then it would be, so that is
news.
So
it would be cool.
News. Yeah.
I appreciate
so
that.
So if you or Robert gets tired, just you can lay your head down.
We can lay our head
It'll
down.
Be clean like sheets. That. The cleaning lady's coming before you get there.
Oh,
and now
excellent.
I'll have to give you a little instruction sheet because, of course, I'm using that Onkyo AV receiver, and I'll have to tell you which of the inputs are which.
That would be good.
You could figure it out just by trying.
I can figure it out, sure. But
what I have on there is a Chromecast, a Apple TV.
Yeah.
It has a MHL slot that there's a Roku. I don't know if it's in there, but it's in the front panel. You can plug it into that if you want to use the Roku.
Okay. All right. You got a Blu-ray player?
It has the cable box. And then, and this is kind of not the ideal way to do it, yes, I put the PlayStation 3 down there, and it's plugged in.
Okay, good.
But it's not the ARC's not working. Audio return channel's not working for some reason from that. So you have to use TV sound when you're using the Blu-ray for the knots. I don't think that matters to your calibration.
No, it doesn't. That's true. Yeah. So in other words, you've got the PS3 plugged into the TV?
No, it's plugged into this receiver, but ARC's not working for some reason. So it's probably a receiver issue because it's on the ARC. The receiver itself is on the ARC port on the TV.
Why would you need ARC is my question.
Oh, I wouldn't. Actually, you're right. For the Blu-ray, I don't. Never mind. Yeah. What am I talking about? I'm talking about if you use the smart TV functions.
Ah, in the TV.
In the TV. Netflix, Amazon, all of that's in the TV. Right, right. The TV's very capable, but it's all coming through the TV speakers until I figure out why ARC
because,
is not working.
Yeah, for that you would want ARC.
ARC, that's what I'm talking about. You're right. Working. Yeah. The Blu-ray.
I'm going to probably mostly be interested in Blu-ray.
Works fine. I was able to do 3D. Uh-huh. Actually, wait a minute. I think I was not getting audio from the Blu-ray. Maybe that's what the issue was.
Hmm.
I don't know. I'll figure that out. That can't be. Because you're right. It's an HDMI input.
Yeah, exactly.
Might be some setting in the PS3. And I also have the calibration discs down there. But I know you'll bring your own. But
yeah, we'll bring some. I'll bring a pattern generator as well. I'm going to actually try two different colorimeters.
Good.
Because we're concerned about whether or not the spectral density, the spectral curves of the OLED and how it produces color are going to fool one meter or another.
You can choose color space on it.
Right, exactly. Nature of the OLED material itself.
I think you can choose sRGB. I can't remember what the color spaces are, but I think there's a couple of color spaces you can choose from. I believe. Cool. I may be wrong.
Cool.
And there is an MHL HDMI port on the front of the Onkyo. So if you have something with HDMI, you can use that. That comes in as aux. But I'll write that down. I'm leaving abruptly. I have so much to do.
I hope I get everything done.
I'll try to remember to write that all down. But if I didn't, I think you could figure it all out. The other thing is, I don't have the surround speakers hooked up, so it's just 2-1 sound.
Yeah, it's all right.
And I think that's fine. You played with that down there.
I did. Now I forget though. Is the receiver on top of a cabinet or in?
It's in the cabinet. The TV's on a cabinet, and it's in the cabinet. It's all very obvious. You open the cabinet.
Looking behind the receiver won't be so easy. Yeah.
Don't do that.
Okay.
If you can help it.
If you have a moment, you might change my to movie mode on the TV I'm looking at.
You TV people are so finicky. So finicky. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson's here. He's our home theater guru. For those of you who were curious about this Paris phone thing, we'll get back to that after Scott. But I hate to get off schedule, and Scott's always here at the bottom of the hour in the first hour. And it's great to talk to you, Scotty. Scott's up on Thursday to fix my TV.
Well, not fix it, but optimize it, shall we say.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to calibrate the TV for optimum picture quality. And the good news is, for me, is it's my first time that I get to actually work with an OLED TV.
Out of the country, so you could spend weeks if you wish. You may never leave.
I may never leave. Yeah. No. Yeah. But the other good news is that we're actually going to record the video of me and Robert Herron, who we're going to collaborate together and do this calibration. And then that's going to become the episode of Home Theater Geeks the following Monday. So we're going to actually we're going to do a remote in your home.
I'm excited about that.
Looking at your TV, calibrating it, making sure it performs at its best, and giving our evaluation of this new display technology, OLED or OLED.
Yeah. I was watching, one of the things I immediately saw with it is you want the best quality input because it is such a good screen. If you have subpar, some ESPN is 720p, for instance, and you just notice it. You could see it. And certainly anything that's 480p or 480i.
Oh, yeah. Standard def.
Terrible.
Yeah.
But even what ostensibly HD signals can look bad because this TV is so accurate.
Yeah. Some channels, are better than others.
I was watching Breaking Bad last night on, believe it or not, the Chromecast, that little Google dongle.
Streaming,
and it streams 1080p from Google Play and from Netflix, and it looked wonderful.
Wow.
I was very pleasantly surprised. I didn't expect
that.
That's
great.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take a look at some of that, too, once we're done calibrating.
You'll want to use a Blu-ray player, of course, for the best
of
results.
Of course.
And I'm sure bring down your Master and Commander DVD Blu-ray. Oh,
well, Blu-ray, yeah, exactly. I'll bring
Scott
along
uses that because it has those dark, dark
I
want to
see that
beginning.
Shadow detail.
Oh, you will love it. It's like the TV's off. It's like nothing. It's like black is black.
Well, yeah, that right there is a really important thing about OLED is this deep, deep black. But also, and equally important, is how the low-level details, I mean, like this scene where the Watchman is walking under the decks at night on the ship in the opening scene of Master and Commander, there are things that are, you know, that total black and then not quite black and a little bit lighter than that, but all in that very dark range.
Yeah.
And there can be something called crushing blacks, which means you lose a lot of that detail in just a flat black blob on the screen. So this is one of the things we really look at in TV reviews is whether or not you can see those subtle details in the dark regions.
And this is why you use the same DVD over and over, because you know
Correct.
That there's something there.
Right.
If the blacks are crushed, it may just look like black, and you may not know that you're missing something. So it's important that you know what you're looking at.
And this is why whenever you're evaluating a TV, whether or not you're thinking about buying one, I mean, in a store, this is difficult. But if you can, take content discs that you know already, and you can see how well the TV is producing based upon what you already know about that disc and that image.
And by no, we don't mean the plot line.
No, the stars.
We mean, especially in a particular scene, how much detail, what it looks like on the
what
best displays.
Like.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'll
right.
be very curious. Don't tell me if it's crappy because I won't.
Oh, no, no.
I won't
I
be
doubt
at all happy.
We've already heard from a couple of reviewers who say, I think Dr. Ron Soniera at DisplayMate called it the best TV ever. And
Consumer Reports said the same thing. Consumer Reports said
Consumer
the best.
Consumer Reports. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, exactly. Best TV ever. Now, there aren't very many journalists who have actually had one to play with outside of Samsung.
That's why I spent the big bucks for you guys. I didn't do it for me. Don't think I did it for me. This is for you, the people. I wanted you to know what
most
you're
of the
missing.
Most of the reports that we've heard have been from journalists who were invited by Samsung to go to their facility and look at the TV there. And they spent hours there and stuff, but it's not the same as having it in your own place.
You're in my basement. And
I'm in your basement. And man, oh man, I am just honored and thrilled to have this opportunity, let me tell you.
Nothing special down there. anything you want to talk about? I don't want to take up the whole segment here on my,
that's okay.
my issues.
No. Well, I do want to note the passing of Ray Dolby.
No kidding. 80-something years old. The pioneer.
Old.
A pioneer. Yeah. I've met the man, of course. Dolby is headquartered in San Francisco. And he was a legend. Very generous. Very sweet guy.
Yeah, but a very private guy.
Yes. He didn't grandstand at all, did he?
No, he really didn't. And he and his company just did some incredibly pioneering work, starting with noise reduction. As we all remember, cassettes. Anybody remember cassettes?
Yeah, if you had doubly, it would automatically, when you recorded the cassette, you'd flip the doubly switch, and it would automatically boost the highs.
No, it would reduce the highs.
It would boost them on recording.
On recording, that's what I mean.
And then on playback, it would knowing that it already boosted them 10 dB, would reduce them 10 dB, at the same time reducing hiss, which was a big problem for those of you who remember physical media. Yeah, hiss.
And it only did that with the quiet signals. If the signal was loud already, it didn't do it.
Right.
Because it didn't need to. The loud sound would mask the tape noise. But in the quiet passages, it would boost them up. And then when it played back, it would that was called pre-emphasis.
Right.
And then when they played it back, it would de-emphasize or reduce it back down. And by so doing, it would also reduce the tape noise. And so it made cassettes a viable medium for portable music. And of course, everybody remembers the Walkman. And, you know, I had one. I took it on walks with me, literally. We have Ray Dolby to thank for making cassettes viable. Dolby also did the first surround sound. Star Wars and Close Encounters of the Third Kind had Dolby Stereo was the first use of that in a commercial cinema. Of course, we also have Dolby Surround, Dolby Pro Logic, Dolby Digital, and now Dolby True HD, which is a lossless compression. So they have made quite the impact on the sound of what we enjoy in terms of movies and TV and Blu-ray and DVD and all that stuff.
My memory, I think, wasn't Ray Dolby at Ampex when they created the video tape recorder? I think that's where he got his... I may be wrong on that.
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Co-inventor of video tape recording at Ampex. That's right. I'm seeing it now. Okay. Yeah. So that, I mean, this guy has quite an engineering background. So we wouldn't have a VCR. We wouldn't have had a VCR without Ray Dolby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. Pretty amazing. So I note with sadness his passing. And I'm sure Dolby will carry on continue to make great things.
They've hasn't been very active in the company for some time.
Not lately. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, he deserved to retire.
Absolutely. he was there, though. I mean, we did a benefit for my school, actually, at Dolby Labs in San Francisco. And Ray came and.
No kidding.
Yeah. It was he had Alzheimer's, so he wasn't, he wasn't in the best of shape, but he was there. And, he was excited to be there, I think. So it's really a neat story. Ray Dolby passed away at the age of 80.
Of 80. Yeah, just last September 12th.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a couple days ago. So,
Scott, who's on the Home Theater Geeks on Monday?
Home Theater Geeks. I have a very special guest, actually. David Katzmeyer, the head TV reviewer at CNET. So tune in Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern.
You can invite him down and sit in the basement with you if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
He's in New York.
Thanks, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I bet he'd fly out just for that. No, CNET already had a review, actually. He's seen it already.
But
that was in the Samsung.
He saw it in the Samsung facility. When I told him what I was doing, he said, "Ooh, I'm jealous."
Yeah, to actually have your hands on it and to be able to mess with it and
exactly.
and screw around
without
with
a Samsung guy, over your shoulder going, "Oh no, don't touch that." I doubt Samsung did that, but
no. But at the same time, also it may have been. It's probably was calibrated by Samsung and.
Yeah.
You know, probably. I have one out of the box. Like, you'd get it if you bought it, if you were silly enough to buy it.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah.
I just can't.
I'm very happy with it. There's quirks in the software and so forth, but I'm very, very happy with it.
I expect to be pretty blown away myself.
Yeah, I don't want to oversell it because I don't want you to get there and go, well, you know, it's nice. It's nice, I guess. Nothing special.
No, I bet it is something special.
I feel like it is, and you know, I have the Viera upstairs, the Viera's bigger; it's 65 inches,
right?
But given the choice, I always sit downstairs because it really, for football, it's incredible. You got to turn off the plastic stuff. It hasn't come back on since then, so I don't know why.
Yeah, didn't you tell me that?
It automatically came back. It reset its settings at one point, a couple of times. It hasn't done that since.
I wonder, maybe that was an automatic firmware download or something.
It might have been there was a download.
Do you have it connected to the TV connected to the internet?
Oh,
right?
Yeah, it's on the internet, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
So they could potentially be doing that, and in which case it might reset these things.
Yes.
If it resets the calibration, then I would be really upset because that takes time to do.
And I may be wrong that there's a way to save out the calibration. I hope so.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there is. There's memories. So probably if it did do that, all you'd have to do would be to... go into the memories and say, okay, bring that calibration back.
I'll be pissed. Now, is there any way for you to export your calibration to publish it for people?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to use a software program called CalMan from SpectraCal that generates all kinds of great graphs. And I'm going to publish those graphs, come out as PDFs.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm going to just, make them available to your web guy. And
would I be able to use them to recalibrate? No.
No, but I'll publish the settings as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because there are settings on the screen. I mean, I can...
Yeah. So the contrast, brightness, tint, color, sharpness, and then all the grayscale calibration numbers as well. And if it has a color management system, which it probably does, you say it's got more controls than...
I've never seen anything like it. It has... it does have two reference, screens...
test patterns?
Test patterns, yeah. Mm-hmm. Only two, but hey, still, that's two.
Yeah, really. The big question that I have is, does it have what's called a color management system, which lets you actually move where the red, green, and blue colors are?
Right. Wouldn't that be nice?
I, Well, and I assume it does, and I hope it does, because from what I've seen on show floors, the colors are always very garish, and I think they're way outside where they should be for accurate video reproduction. So one of my big questions is, can you tame that? Can you bring that color gamut, the range of colors that you can reproduce, can you bring that into the system standard, which is technically known as Rec. 709?
Right. Well, I don't know. I browsed a little bit in the settings, but I didn't spend much time there because I was afraid of what would happen.
Well, you can't break it. You know, you can. And then there's always a reset button. There is. Take it back
there
to
is
standard.
A reset to defaults, yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, this is just going to be great.
Yeah, so, Heather has a question for you. Her car stereo's busted.
Oh, man.
Speaker blown is all.
Was it blown when you bought it, or...?
You know, it was. I think it's...
Rattled a little.
It was just like mine. I blew mine. She blew hers.
Right. Oh, that's...
You're just playing your music too loud, Heather.
Yeah. Crappy Harman Kardon. No, I need loud. I need volume.
So she wants to know what to buy. Well, but you'll have to tell her another time, because...
Oh, shoot. I also wanted to know his ringtone. Get in the chat room, Scotty.
What's your ringtone?
It's a dog barking.
Damn it.
It is. That's what I use for everybody.
Well, now we know. Scott Wilkinson's ringtone is a dog barking. That would annoy the hell out of me, and it would drive Ozzy up the wall. You know, Lisa's ringtone is a doorbell ringing, which is also very bad. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We were talking with Dave, or no, was it Dave? Somebody who's going to Paris. And he was asking, this is kind of the perennial traveler's question. What do you do about using your smartphone overseas? Now, if you're only going one place, it's a lot simpler. I have a much more complicated problem because I'm going to be in 5 countries in 3 weeks. And unfortunately, currently, there isn't one SIM card I could buy in any one of those countries that would work in all or even most of them. That's about to change. The European rules about data roaming are changing on the first of the year. So that's up in the air. But for now, I would suggest one of two things, which is one is the easy one, but the most expensive one, which is to go to your cell carrier. Verizon's not a great one for this. Make sure you have an international phone and then buy an international data plan. If you don't have an international phone, if you have a Verizon or Sprint phone that doesn't work overseas, well, you're going to have to rent one or buy one from them or somebody else. But if they say, oh, no, that'll work in Paris, then you're going to buy data. Now, unfortunately for Verizon, I think it's $25 for 100 megabytes. And I don't know how many times you can buy that. I'm on AT&T, and I was able to buy 800 megabytes, which should last me 3 weeks. It's very expensive. It's $250. But at least I'll have some data on that phone. And to me, was worth it. Because then I can use the phone to get email, to get text, to check that kind of stuff. And most importantly, not to get lost. The maps, I think, are hugely valuable. Now, remember, this is data. Phones is a second issue. You know, if you want to keep your phone number, you want to keep your phone, then you can either bite the bullet and pay several dollars a minute, or you can buy an international plan. In all cases, by the way, you want to check the international plans for data and phones, and text too, which is a third kind of data. You want to make sure that the countries you're going to are supported. So you can buy an international plan that doesn't, in fact, work because they don't have a roaming agreement in the country you are in. And in that case, you could really be sorry. Then the other way to do it is to buy a SIM in the country you're going to. You can go to Paris, buy a French SIM. The place I like to go to find out what SIMs work where and how much and who's the best is a wiki called prepaidwithdata.wikia.com. And you could pick the country. We'll go to France here. And you can see a little bit of background information. There are 4 operators in France, Orange, SFR, Bouygues, or something like that, and Free Mobile. And then you could see the various SIMs you can buy. In many cases, you could buy these SIMs at the airport, at a newsstand, sometimes at the post office, or, of course, at the phone stores, at the Orange store or whatever. And so the thing to do is to check and see who offers the best deal unlimited data if you can, but if you can't, who offers the best deal per megabyte for how long and so forth. And this is quite a long page for France because a lot of people go there. So that's what I would check. I know one of my colleagues, Sarah Lane, when she went to London last year, bought a little card from Three that was very inexpensive, £15, I think it was, which is what, about $28, and gave her unlimited data for a month, which was great. I mean, that's a good deal. But you have to have an unlocked phone to put those SIMs in. So you may want, and I do this, you may want to go out and purchase an inexpensive unlocked, you know, a Galaxy S3 or something like that, that's unlocked, that's European. That way you can just pop a SIM. I'm going to bring my Galaxy S4, which is an unlocked European Galaxy S4, and that way I'll have a phone I can pop a SIM in and use. All right? All right. Good luck. Have fun in Gay Paris. Dave in Lane Forest, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Leo. You know, I have a I'm a total white guy, but I have Spanish music for my wife's ringtone because she and I just don't speak the same language.
Actually, that's, you know, if it's the kind of music I hear on the Spanish language radio stations, that's very peppy. That'd be good.
You know, it's actually Spanish music from a Target commercial on TV. Went out and found it and downloaded it.
I love it. That's great. She likes it, though, right?
Yeah. It's all funny. So, hey, I've got thousands of pictures from several years of, you know, elementary school with my kids, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, taking pictures for the Cub Pack and the troop. So not just my kids, a ton of kids. I have them on my computer in kind of a traditional Windows file system that doesn't make any sense, but that I thought it did as I was doing it.
Only makes sense to you, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. It doesn't even do that anymore. I used Picasa, and I watched your how-to video with Izzy from earlier in the year.
Yeah, Iaz, yeah.
You guys kind of elbowed at people that do kind of that Windows file system, but didn't say how to organize it. It was just kind of, hey, import them all to Picasa. How do I organize these? What do I do with them so they make sense?
Well, the first thing Picasa will do automatically for you is organize them by date. And that may make sense because if it was a school event on a particular day, that should be easy to go to that. But you can also make folders that make sense. So if you have pictures of a trip, a school trip, I did, you know, I was the chief photographer for a long time on the school trips. You'd make a photo album of that. And that album you can share, not publicly, you probably don't want to do it publicly because it's pictures of kids, but share it with a password protection and then send a message out to the other parents and say, here's where pictures of your kids are. People appreciate that.
Yeah, they do.
And this is a really easy way, and this is, I've done this for years, it's a really easy way to do that. The other thing is you can use, and I would recommend, get the Picasa application, which you can get.
That's what I use.
Yeah. So do it in the Picasa application, and then it will automatically propagate it to the Picasa web albums. The other thing that's fabulous about Picasa is it has face recognition in it. So you can say, hey, this is, you know, Joey, and then it'll find all the photos with Joey in it, which makes it a very easy automatic way to organize.
It's time consuming, but it is cool just to go through a lot of old photos.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And so I'm looking at the photos, the organization I have, and it's pretty haphazard. I have one for, you know, some for dates. I have some for, you know, particular things. I took a series of photos of my ham radio station, and so I put those in a folder. It's a lot easier if you do it as you go, of course.
Yeah.
But Google gives you really nice sharing capabilities. You can see on the right side of your Picasa web albums, you can see who it's shared with. You can check a box that says notify these people when photos are uploaded to this album. So they'll automatically get an email that says there's new pictures in that album. So I think the key is to think that way. You can also organize automatically geographically. And that's kind of neat. If you have... if you've been taken with a camera phone or you use a camera that will add the geographic information, many modern cameras do that. Boy, you really can. That's a lot of fun.
What about, like, and I don't really know what this is called, but like embedding information about the picture into the file,
right,
so that when I find it 15 years from now, when it's not organized.
Yeah, you should always do that. And in Picasa, yeah, totally. You totally can do that. This is called the EXIF or EXIF information. Your camera's already embedded some stuff in there. If you have a camera that automatically does, for instance, geolocation, that's where it puts the longitude and latitude. It'll put the date. It'll put the aperture information about the, you know, the technology, the camera used, how it was set, and so forth. But you can go in there and add notes. You can add people's names. You can add anything you want. And I do think that's an excellent way, because every single program that you use going forward, even into the future, will support EXIF. So you'll be able to, and you can do this now in Picasa Web, you'll be able to open an image and say, here, let me edit the data in the image. And that stuff will stay with the image, which is fabulous.
Very cool.
You know,
very
I think cool. That's a really smart idea. There are programs, and I don't recommend them, that have sidecars, they call them. They'll add data in a sidecar to that photo, but that isn't compatible with the world. You want it to be in, there's two kinds of industry standard, it's called metadata, data in addition to the picture, metadata technologies. One is the one EXIF that I talked about that everybody supports, and there's one that the newspaper folks use, IPTC, that has even more information. That's also standard. So if you have an editor that can edit IPTC, it's not a bad thing to add more information there as well. Most programs will understand that too. Now you've got all the information in the photo. So if you copy it to a CD or a USB key and bring it somewhere else, you should always be able to get that data out of it and organize by it. It's kind of a really good way to do it, better than just folders that are specific to the program. Hey, good question. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Yeah, Picasa. I don't think they're giving up on Picasa, but I think Picasa Web is being replaced by G+. But they still have Picasa Web albums and G+ albums and all of that stuff. Our show today brought to you by my buddies at Hover.com. Hover is a domain name registrar. They were created by the folks at Two Cows to do something that I think Two Cows does really well, which is do a better job of a business that's not doing such a great job for its customers. Domain name registration. If you go to Hover, HOVER.com/tech guy, you can learn all about it and get a discount on your domain name registrations. You can also move your existing registrations over to Hover. Hover is simple, clean, no upselling, friction-free, sometimes people say. So when you register a domain name, you're not going to get 100 checkboxes of junk they want to sell you. It's very simple. I think everybody should have a domain name for their family name or their personal name. That is a great way to do email, for instance. Go to hover.com, register your name. If it's not too late, or something like it. I have Leoville. I've had that for years. And now I give out my email address as a Leoville address and then have Hover forward it to where I want it to go. That's one of many uses for Hover. You know, they also have Google Apps now. This is kind of interesting. If you love the Google productivity apps, Gmail, Calendar, Drive, Docs, you can now have them through your own domain name. We do it at Twit. So if we have mail.twit.tv is Gmail. You can add the Google Apps to a new domain or one you already own. You get, of course, 25 gigs of storage. It's really a good way for a business, but even for a family to have, you know, if you've got students, you've got kids, have your own Google Apps domain. It's great. It's very affordable. And it's a great way to share stuff, including images. But you get your support not from Google, which is really kind of hard to get support from, but from Hover, which does the best support in the world. No hold support during business hours with reps that are empowered to solve your problem. They do offer a 30-day free trial. So go to hover.com, register to your domain name, attach Google Apps to it. You're going to love it. Hover's running a refer-a-friend contest. If you're already a Hover customer, you could win a 2013 Vespa. I love this. I love this. When you refer a friend to Hover, you and your friend get a $2 Hover credit. And for every successful referral, you get 5 entries into the contest. Plus, if you share the blog post on Facebook or Twitter, another additional entry. Contest closes at the end of this month, September 30th. So hurry on over to Hover. Hover will randomly select the winner from all entries. Everyone has a chance to win. They call it spreading the Hover love. Go to hover.com/techguy for more information and use the offer code TECHGUY to get 10% off your domain name registration at hover.com. Where's the Vespa giveaway? There's the Google Apps information. Maybe it's on the front page at Hover. I think that's such a, I guess maybe when you just, I guess you just automatically, if you refer a friend, you get in, you get entered in. Hover.com/tech guy. Well, hello. How are you? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders and home theater and MP3s and all that jazz. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Can you believe this is a sign of the times? Apple announced a new iPhone on Tuesday, and I haven't talked about it much at all. Are you yawning, Heather? I think Heather's yawning.
It seems like people were underwhelmed.
Well, I was underwhelmed by the iPhone 5, and it turned out to be the best-selling iPhone of all time, so it shows what I know. Hmm. The tech journalist wants something exciting every time. You know, we want something to get jump up and down about, to write about, to... And, of course, that's not how things work, especially for an established company like Apple. And I think if for an established, and I think this is what's changed, an established category like smartphones. When Apple launched the iPhone in 2007, they changed everything. And it was there was a lot of innovation, a lot of changes, a lot of exciting stuff for the first few years. But, this has been around for a while. And I think we kind of understand now that, you know, how it works and what doesn't work. And really, they're all just slabs of glass with a computer behind them. They're touch screens. And I think everybody's kind of got the idea. So I don't expect to see wild innovation anymore. That's fine. That's a mature industry. That's how it works in technology. You know, the wild innovation is going to go towards, I think, wearable computing, things like that. Nevertheless, the computer you interact with most, I interact with most, sometimes too much these days, is your smartphone. I mean, haven't we all seen the movies and the videos of people staring at their phones and walking into traffic and walking into trees? And it's true, though. You go to a restaurant nowadays, and everybody's looking at their phone. They're not looking at each other. Now, I'm not complaining about that, but I think that just is a measure of the fact that these phones have taken over. They are easily the most popular, most used computers in our lives. So Apple's new iPhones, there are two of them. iPhone 5C, which is a very colorful reinvention of the existing iPhone 5. It's not much different. In fact, the only difference, besides the increased battery life, slightly increased battery life, is cosmetic. It's got a plastic, colorful, five colors, plastic back, and they're offering new croc-like cases for them as well, although you're not required, obviously, to use the Apple case. I think they're very nice. The thing that's a little disappointing to some, certainly the stock market, was that they're not much less expensive than the existing iPhone 5. They're $100 less on contract and off. They're $100 less. And people were hoping there would be a lot less. But, you know, hope all you want. Apple is a business, and it's in business to make money, and they've made the decision, probably correct, that the iPhone is considered a premium product and sells at a premium price, and they don't want to change that. So they're offering a slightly less expensive iPhone that will appeal to younger people, I think, because of the colors. I think that's what that's aimed for, aimed at. The 5C is, I say C is for kids. C is for the I don't know, 15 to 25 group. And I think the iPhone 5S, which is the next generation iPhone, is definitely aimed at older folks. It comes in... Well, I call it black. They call it space gray, white, and gold, or champagne kind of a light gold. It's very pretty, but and also classy. Not the kind of thing kids, you know, kids want bright colors, right? I guess. I don't know. So that's why they made the 5C in bright colors, and they made the flagship 5S in more muted adult tones. The 5S is much faster. They put a much faster chip in it. They also put a 64-bit chip in it. I'll talk about that in a bit. But the biggest change people will notice with the iPhone 5S is the fingerprint reader. It has a built-in fingerprint reader where the home button is, and the idea is you can unlock the phone with that. And apparently, I haven't tried it, but apparently it's very accurate. So it more so than, say, the face recognition technology, which just never has worked on Android. The fingerprint, apparently quite accurate. Apple bought the company last year that makes this Authentic. It also, and this is Apple putting its money literally where its thumb is, you can use your thumbprint or fingerprint to buy stuff on the App Store and on iTunes. That's big. Because Apple says, we trust this enough that we're going to let you use it as basically authentication for your credit card. Wow. That means they really believe in it. And I'm sure that's why they did it. They didn't let other companies do this yet, but I suspect if it's a success and they don't get a lot of fraud, that they will then extend it to other companies, making the iPhone a very interesting way to buy products. They have a new technology they call iBeacon that relies on Bluetooth LE, low energy Bluetooth, that allows a merchant to put a little thing on the wall of the store. When you walk in the store, the merchant says, ah, you're here, and can flash an offer up or say, hey, Leo, knows my name, knows what I like. Would you like another? Are you here for your regular, your usual? Just like the friendly bartender. You want the usual? And I push my thumb to the phone. I say, yes, it's there. It's ready. It's waiting. And I pay for it all in one stroke of the thumb. Now, that's not here yet, but that's, I think, the long-term vision from Apple. That's kind of innovative. However, it will be owned by Apple. That's another thing Apple likes. You're not going to see anybody else doing this. Apple owns it. And this is why they prefer it probably to NFC, which is in every other phone, a technology that could be used the same way. You tap your phone against a cash register and pay for it. Apple doesn't own that one, so they're not doing it. They own fingerprints. They really do, now that they bought Authentic. So, that, you know, from a financial point of view, it makes sense. From an innovation point of view, I think it's definitely an innovation. Somebody raised an interesting issue about this, though, in terms of security. You may not want to rely on the thumbprint because, this is bizarre, you cannot plead the fifth with a fingerprint. So, you know, you have a right against self-incrimination, right? The police, courts are not allowed to ask you for incriminating information. When you're testifying in court, you can take the fifth, right? I'm sorry, if I were to answer that question, it would self-incriminate, and so I'm not going to do that. And the courts have upheld your right to do that. It's a constitutional right. But the courts have also said this only applies to things in your head, like a password. That applies. They cannot ask you for a password if unlocking the phone would reveal something that would incriminate you. It does not apply to a fingerprint. That's not something in your head. That's something you have. And the courts have upheld many times that is not protected by the right against self-incrimination. So you may just be aware that there is a little bit of a change in how and your privacy, in a sense. Interesting, huh? I hadn't really thought about that until somebody, a lawyer, wrote a blog post about it. The other big change, which everybody who has a recent iPhone, including you, Heather, you have an iPhone 4, it's 4 or later, or an iPad 2 or later, or an iPad mini is going to get, on September 18th, 4 days from now, you will be offered a brand new operating system, iOS 7. Beware, you may not want this. I wouldn't rush to get it for two reasons. One, because as always with a completely reimagined OS, some apps won't work. They've had a pretty good beta test, and I think most apps do, but you should always, the apps that you want, you should make sure they work with iOS 7 before you upgrade. That's just prudent. The other one's a little different, which is it looks really different and acts really different, and you may be freaked out by it. Apple thinks you will. That's why they've been training their geniuses to answer questions from freaked out users who say, where's my search? How does this work? The calendar's all different. I would be slow to upgrade to iOS 7. I'm not super fond of it. I guess I'll get used to it. I don't like how it looks and in some cases how it works, but you might just be slow to adopt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, you guys don't, Steve, you're not understanding how Google Apps works at all. This is the Google Apps for Business, which you pay Google for the same amount. But Google does this with a lot of companies. You can be a provider. That way they have somebody do the support, because Google really doesn't support you with Google Apps, as you probably know. Apple is rolling it out to everyone, but you don't have to accept. It's not compelling you. So I forgot to bring my iPhone because I have it on there. You don't test it, Cool Bite. You wait till people howl, or you go to the website of the company. You don't test it unless you want to. Darth Koala, that was what the guy who wrote, let me see if I can find this article, who wrote this article suggested, that if Apple were to say fingerprint plus PIN, that would be protected by the Fifth. The PIN would be protected by the Fifth. However, that obviates the whole point of the convenience of the fingerprint, which is that you don't have to enter a PIN. This is Marsha Hoffman writing for a Wired Opinion. And she says at the end, give users the option to unlock their phones with a fingerprint plus something the user knows. The truth is, you do have always the option to use your PIN only. So if you don't turn on the fingerprint reading, you won't have this problem. So if you keep stuff on your phone that might incriminate you, I would suggest you not use the fingerprint. Yeah, I have the GMF and done. I did not use the previous ones. Let me paste this in here. So I've been playing with the GM on my iPhone 5. You know what? And maybe it's just me. What really bugs me, the zoom in and out is extreme. And it makes me a little queasy. I turn off all those effects on my Android phone. See, to me, this is the issue. An iPhone, you can't, you know, in an Android phone, if you don't like how it looks, you just get a new launcher. You can do whatever you want. And there's some very innovative, interesting launchers. Same thing with the keyboard. It bugs the hell out of me that Apple has not fixed their broken keyboard. They still have only uppercase letters on that keyboard. That's just bad UI design. And because you can't use another keyboard on an iPhone, that's, to me, a huge deal breaker. Yeah, battery life is very good. Excellent on iOS 7. And I imagine with the new M7 external processors on the iPhone 5S, you should see even better battery life. So even on the old iPhone 5, battery life is excellent on iOS 7. I will eventually lurk. I'm going to keep this Twit Manifesto internal as a working document for a while, and eventually I'll make a blog post. But I'll read you the advertiser, at least the preliminary advertiser. Twit's revenue comes from advertising, and I expect it will continue that way. I know I'm going to run out of time. After the next break. Smile on your face. Smile. Oh, those smiling faces. They just lie. Lee, I love this. I forgot all about this song. The Backstabbers. Our great musical director, Nathan Staten. I called you Jason the other day. Jason, because I was thinking of Jason Statham. Nathan Staten, different person. He's not the guy from Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. That's a different guy. But he is our musical director and doing a great job. Thank you, Nathan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo is the number. We were talking about the new iPhones a little bit, and I'd certainly love to get your impression. Apple did another thing that kind of annoys me, and I want you to explain this to me. Explain this to me, Apple, or somebody who understands it. You can pre-order the 5C, the color one, because pre-ordering started yesterday at midnight. You cannot pre-order the 5S, the fancy high-end one, the one I want. You have to wait till it's available. Both phones will be available on the 20th, but you can only pre-order one. The other one you have to go to the store to get, or you can order it on the 20th and get it later. Hmm. See, I would like to pre-order it now, as we have done in the past for the past few iPhone generations. You pre-order it. It arrives the day it's available on the 20th by FedEx, and you get it, and you have the new phone. And the only reason I can think for this change, and please correct me if I'm wrong. I want to be wrong. Is that Apple wants there to be lines.
Yes.
They've decided that it's good marketing, that there are people waiting out in front of an Apple store on September 20th. And as a result, they're disadvantaging their most
ardent.
Ardent. Thank you for the word. Ardent consumers. They're saying, you know, no, you have to wait in line.
Well, the foot traffic also might up buying cases.
That's the other thing.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So it's it's greedy. Saying we want better marketing. We want a line. We want you to come to the store. Maybe you'll buy a Macintosh while you're there. Who knows? Although you don't have to go to an Apple store. You can go to the phone store and get it. So you can go to your Verizon or your AT&T. But they want lines. And I don't know why they let you pre-order the 5C but not pre-order the 5S. Explain that to me. Explain it to me. You've got some explaining to do, team. I think a company that spits on its customers is not long for this world. And I think when a company does something that is clearly about, you know, makes it less convenient for its customers so that they can get better marketing, get better news reports on the local news, that's not nice. Mm-hmm. Come on, that's just not nice. Maybe there's another reason, that a perfectly good reason. Oh, we couldn't make enough of them. I can't think of what it is.
If I have to go to the store, they better hand me a glass of champagne with my new phone.
Oh, it's a great experience. Let me tell you, I've waited in line for iPhone several times, the first iPhone, the second iPhone, and it was a great experience. You meet neat people. But at 6 hours of my life, I don't want to spend in line at the Apple store. And Apple has always in the past, or not always, but in the last three generations, let us pre-order so we didn't have to wait in line. We could just get it. It just bugs the heck out of me. I know most people won't say this is a problem, but I see that as bad corporate behavior. Mm-hmm. Now, to get back to iOS 7, I would say don't jump. You know, you'll get the offer September 18th. Your phone will say there's an update. Do you want it? I would say hesitate a little bit. If you can, look at your friend's iOS 7. Make sure you can take it. The colors, it's a very different design. You can change the wallpaper, and I did immediately. So it's not the Candy Crush wallpaper anymore. But it still uses a lot of bright colors. It's a flat design, no more skeuomorphism. That's fine. I don't mind that. I don't miss that. It's kind of like a Windows phone in that respect. That's more modern, I agree. It's a little weird, though, a little jarring, because many apps have not yet updated. In fact, Apple themselves haven't updated some of their app icons. They still have the old 3D fake lighting icons, for instance, the iWork apps. Now, I bet you Apple updates these before next week, but the iWork apps,
Pages.
iPages, and you know those numbers. Pages, numbers, and, well, you know your iPhone better than I do. Pages, numbers,
Keynote.
those icons don't match the new iOS 7 look. They still have the little bevels and all that stuff. Oh, now let's talk about 64-bit, because that's another one where Apple is certainly getting some mileage. They're the first smartphone to have a 64-bit operating system. That won't disadvantage any existing apps. They'll all work just fine, as always. But Apple, you know, gets a little bit of bragging rights with that. And by the way, don't think it doesn't matter to the other companies. Samsung immediately said, oh, we're going to do that. Well, they can't right away because Android doesn't support it. So Apple's got a lead here. But let me ask, or let me say a little bit, I don't think it's much of a lead, because there's really no technological reason that you need 64 bits, especially in a smartphone. We talked about this before. Microsoft moved everybody to 64-bit desktop operating systems, and there was a very good reason for that. In order to address more than 4 gigabytes of RAM, which is a lot of RAM, but in order to address more than 4 gigabytes, you need to go to a 64-bit operating system. No phone is even close to that yet. iPhones, I think, are a gigabyte of RAM. The biggest RAM on any phone I know of is the Galaxy Note 3, and that's 3 gigabytes. You don't want more RAM because it uses more battery life. It's not a good idea, so I don't see smartphones moving to 4 gigabytes of RAM right away. So there's no benefit in terms of being able to access more RAM. Even on an iPad, I don't expect that to happen. There's no need for it. These are not really multitasking operating systems. You got plenty of memory. And that's the other reason. You know, the benefit of 64-bit architectures is a little technical, a little difficult for people to understand. It really, the benefit comes from a bigger, being able to handle a bigger chunk of data, 64 bits instead of 32 bits. They have registers, which are special portions of the processor that handle the data. Those registers are now twice as big. But it's rare that you need to handle numbers that big. Cryptography, it will certainly speed up cryptography. And then some video games might benefit. But my question to you is, do you notice that your phone feels slow? Heather, you got a really old iPhone. Yeah, my phone. Does it feel slow to you? It's not slow.
Not as slow as something.
Well, what's slow to you? Like, what do you wait for on your iPhone? Anything? Well, oh boy, I wish this application had launched faster. No, they launch right like that.
Yeah. Well, I did. My biggest thing is the battery thing, and I did what you did, which was just take Facebook off.
Better battery life is definitely a part of iOS 7. And even more so of the 5S. They have changed the architecture to mean that the phone doesn't wake up as much, which will definitely increase your battery life significantly. And they've put a bigger battery in the 5C and an even bigger battery in the 5S, about a 10% increase in battery size. But they've also added a special processor, the M7 processor, that handles the accelerometer, and it's for health, you know, for pedometer and things like that. And that means that they won't drain the battery as much. So it doesn't have to stay on to watch you walk.
Gimme.
Yeah, I think you should get a 5S. I think you'd like it. And that gold, I think, would look good on you.
Oh, the champagne.
By the way, when you buy a new iPhone, you're going to get iOS 7. That's, you don't have a choice on that. It's only the older iPhones you can decide. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He is. Where are you, Johnny?
You want to take a little guess?
Yeah, I don't recognize the place. Oh, it looks like California. It's either that or Tuscany. Did you ever notice that Tuscany and California look exactly the same?
They do. I think Sydney and Los Angeles look a lot alike, too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When I went to Tasmania, we spent, 20 hours flying to Tasmania, which is an island just south of the tip of Australia. And it's on the 40th parallel, and it's exactly the same latitude as Petaluma. And except for kangaroos and wallabies, it was exactly the same. I thought, why did I fly all the way to Tasmania? It looks just like California.
You get some accents. You get some good food, too.
So the chat room guesses you're in Pasadena.
No, I'm in. I'm right outside Toronto in Canada.
Oh, you're in Canada. All right.
I just flew out here last night.
Visiting the little woman.
It's my year anniversary this weekend.
Oh, congratulations. Wow, has it been a year already? Wow, that went fast.
It's been 1 year, and I'm in my mother-in-law's apartment.
All right. So Johnny is our travel guru, johnnyjet.com, at johnnyjet is his Twitter handle. He joins us every week to show us how to use technology to be a better traveler.
So I got a couple websites for you, and also have some news I thought we'd talk about a little bit.
All right.
What's big in news? So for the websites, there's a new website called whatsbusy.com. So whatsbusy.com. Have you heard of it?
And it's a desktop app?
It's a new app. It's not an app. It's an app and a website. So you can go to the website as well.
Oh, okay.
And so it projects the wait times for airports, museums, DMVs, national parks, parking, restaurants, and bars around the country.
Now, that's huge, because if you're going to a museum, sometimes the lines can be really long.
I know. I haven't used it for the museums, but obviously I'm more interested in the airports. And it says it has current real-time wait times at 100 U.S. airports.
Oh, that is really great.
And I don't know how they do it in real time. I know the TSA, if you also Google My TSA, the TSA has their own website as well now, and that they're using real time, and I guess they're using security cameras to let to update the information.
Wow. So you tell it what time you're going to arrive at the airport.
Yep, which airport. Which and then it'll show you all the different terminals, especially for, you know, a big airport like San Francisco or LAX. And it tells you all the different wait times.
This is really cool. So that's so really
in
nice.
In the green is 0 to 10 minutes. Yellow is 11 to 20 minutes. And red is 21 minutes or longer.
This is really useful. You know, they tell a story about Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, who hated spending time waiting in the airport. So he would always time his departure to the second so that he would pull up at the airport, run in the door, run to the gate. They'd be just closing the door on the airplane. He'd run in and sit down.
This is Bill Gates?
Bill Gates. Now, of course, now he doesn't fly commercial anymore. But this was in the he doesn't. No, I'm sure he has his own jet now. But in the early days of Microsoft, he flew commercial. I think he even flew coach. And he's famous because he'd plop in the seat, he'd put a blanket over his head, and he'd sleep the entire flight. He was notorious for this.
I've actually seen – I flew one time with Jennifer Lopez. She was at seat in front of me in first class. She got on the plane, same thing, put the blanket right over her head and slept the whole flight. I was
well,
like, man.
If you're Jennifer, think about it. If you're a superstar and you're flying commercial, you don't want anybody to recognize you because that just means you're not going to get peace at all. So
that's true.
So you just – I do the same thing.
And, you know, I love
– I wear a Johnny Jet mask so I get good treatment.
Actually, my seatmate last night was sitting there going, how do you get this treatment? I got on the plane and I gave the flight attendant some chocolates and, you know, they buy me food. Then they give me a bottle of champagne at the end of the flight. And the woman just looked at me and I'm like, all you got to do is be nice to these people. People don't understand.
That's because nobody's nice to them and they're so grateful.
But I love the airports, by the way, that show the wait time for how long your bag's going to come out when you do check a bag. And I don't know any airports in America that do that, but usually in Asia, you know, they also have a ring around the baggage carousel so you know not to be right on top of it, to give it like a 3 feet.
I hate that. People go right up there. Your bag's going by and you can't get anywhere near it because they're going, no, my bag's going to be here. That's so impolite.
Organized.
Yeah, so impolite.
But speaking of Asia, there's a couple of things in the news this week. One, did you see the Thai Airways? They had one of their A330 jets skidded off the runway in Bangkok.
Don't tell me about this. I'm about to fly.
No, I mean, listen, there are so many flights a day. There's nothing to worry about. But what was crazy is that the first thing they did is they evacuated the passengers. And the second thing they did was supposedly cover the logos. They painted up all the logos and all the mentions of Thai Airways, even though they're at their home airport and there's all these other planes taken off with the same colors.
Pay no attention to that plane that skidded off the railway. Well, I think that's called damage control.
It's damage control? Can you believe they said witnesses said they were doing it right away.
It has there's something called the Barbra Streisand effect. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Yeah, Barbra Streisand. I can't even remember what it was she was suing about, but she didn't like some tabloid story about her, so she sued. And of course, people would have the story would have gone by in a day, and nobody would have remembered it. But because she made such a big deal about it, I remember they were showing an aerial picture of her house, and because she made such a big deal about it. Well, everybody saw the aerial picture of her house. We all know where she lives. It's better just to let these things go, not go crazy over trying to.
I agree.
Yeah.
So speaking of crazy,
or if you do it, by the way, paint it white. Don't use a black magic marker.
No kidding.
I think it's pretty obvious.
I think they actually painted it on the actual plane as well.
It looks
not
like
just
they
the photos.
Yeah. Nice.
That's what I heard. So anyway, also United, I don't know if you heard about their mistake fares this week.
No.
They, for 15 minutes, they were not charging any prices except the security fees. So
it's free.
All these people got $5 and $10 fares. It was just,
now, when that happens, usually the companies say, oh, that was a mistake. Give us more money.
They don't, but they honored it this week.
That's
nice. They
just
came out yesterday saying they're honoring it.
See, now that's good PR. That means more people go to the United site now and hope that this is going to happen. And when it doesn't, maybe they'll still buy a ticket.
This day and age, everyone has Twitter and it's just and Facebook. It's just it's not worth it.
There are no
secrets. And the other news, and I was down in Anaheim with Gogo, the in-flight internet. They flew me out for their big announcement, which was starting in 2014, Virgin America is going to launch new Wi-Fi service, which is supposed to be 6 times to 20 times faster than it is
right
now. I saw
that.
60 megabits per second.
60 megabits. Now, remember, you're still sharing that with 100 people on a plane, but that's a lot better.
well, also their executives told me that, you know, the bandwidth is tough on San Francisco to New York flights because everyone's online.
Well, it's but that bozo next to you that's watching Netflix and the other one on the other side is Skyping. You can't, you don't do that. Be, again, considerate. Be considerate of your neighbors. How does that work, the go-go stuff? Is it a satellite signal or is it a ground signal? Did they explain that?
They did. So this new one's going to be a hybrid. It's going to be GTO, ground to orbit, and also air to ground, ATG. So they're going to use a little bit of both. That's why it's going to be so fast.
They'll double it up. And did they say anything about latency? They probably didn't. That's kind of a geeky kind of subject. Yeah.
I think that is.
Well, some of our viewers want to play Call of Duty on the plane, and I think that that's probably out of the options there.
No, but a good tip for GoGo, by the way, if you want to get cheaper internet, buy it in advance. If you wait till you get up in the air, they charge a lot more, especially like on the LA to New York flight. I think it's $26. But if you buy it in advance, you can get it for $14.
Oh, wow. Good deal. I should do that. I'm going to be on a plane on Tuesday. Did you fly on Friday the 13th, Johnny Jet?
I did last night.
You're not a superstitious man, I take it.
Do you know there was a flight, by the way, on Friday the 13th that goes from, I think it was a Finnair, it goes to HEL, Helsinki, flight 666.
To HEL on Friday the 13th.
Flight 666.
I hope that was empty. JohnnyJet.com, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Flight 666 to HEL on Friday the 13th. And I bet it was loaded up. But it was full of people. That's hysterical.
So I wouldn't be doing that.
Sorry?
I wouldn't be flying that one.
No, is that
Flight 666?
I have you up now, Heather. You can talk.
Oh, sorry.
HEL is Helsinki.
Helsinki, again.
Yeah. Helsinki, yeah. I think it was Finnair.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. That's hysterical.
You can Google it. It'll tell you. I saw it in the news yesterday while I was flying, by the way. And I'm like, great. Today's Friday the 13th.
And the plane was filled with black kitty cats.
Friday the 13th travelers take their chances on flight 666 to HEL, the Guardian reports.
And they had to walk under a ladder to board the plane.
And it was filled with black cats.
And you know, my flight, by the way, was fairly empty. And I'm wondering if that had anything to do with Friday the 13th, but people were able to get their whole row in coach and sleep.
Wow.
I sat in the exit row. So
I think that's that tells you that Friday the 13th is a lucky day to fly.
It's a great day to fly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially to hell.
You get cheaper flights, probably.
It's from Copenhagen to Helsinki. It is Finnair, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, hey, great, Johnny. Thank you. I won't see you for a month.
I know.
Thanks for pre-recording with me. I really appreciate you doing that.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
And I'm so excited. I can't wait. And you said that the Wi-Fi on the Seabourn is $400.
Yep, but I'm going to send them a...
Well, that's all right. I don't mind. But is it for both weeks or is it $400 a week?
No, for the cruise. It should be for the whole cruise. At least it was when I flew last year.
And is it for only one device?
That I don't know. And I think it's the same login. So I think you can't be on the same... I don't think you can be on
the same time.
Yeah, because Natalie... She was on her own computer, and it was double the price.
Yeah, Lisa and I can work that out, that we have one account that we just don't get on.
I will email them.
You don't have to, Johnny. That wasn't why I was asking.
They should hook you up. I understand, but they should hook you up.
All right. If they don't, it's not a big deal. I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
What day are you leaving so I can let them know?
The cruise leaves on the Sunday, I think. It's
okay.
It's the Odyssey. From Venice to Istanbul. It's the 2-week Adriatic cruise.
I'm so jealous.
I know. I cannot wait. I'm so excited. Everybody who's been on that cruise tell me it is unbelievable. You loved it, right?
So don't be alarmed when you're going. Of course. And don't be alarmed when you're going through like the lunch buffet and you get your food and all of a sudden one of the waiters is there and they take your food. They say, oh, let me walk you to the... to the table. They don't even want you to carry the food. And I'm like, whoa, 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 get your hands off my dessert. I wasn't sure what was going on. I thought they were trying to take my second dessert away from me.
I can't. I'm excited.
All right.
Istanbul's not Constantinople. No, Istanbul. Not Constantinople. Thank you, my friend.
I hope you have a great trip.
All right. I hope you have a wonderful month, and I'll see you in October.
All right. Take care.
Bye. We'll miss you.
Later. Bye-bye.
It's a whole month. Like, we'll have longer hair and
everybody will look different.
Yeah. You'll be tan.
I'm hanging out. Bye-bye.
Bye. See ya. Here is our new...
hey.
Scott Forstall to Johnny Ive.
Someone had an explanation for why you had to go to the store to get the phone.
Why? Oh, is he on the line?
No, he couldn't get through, okay. So he, what do I want to say? Google Plus'd it to me. Where did it
yes.
go now? It basically has to do with the fingerprint reader because they need to teach you how to use it. Yeah? Here we go.
You're so stupid that we're not going to let you pre-order the phone. If they built a feature into the phone that requires that you go to an Apple store to learn it, they have made a horrible mistake.
Not pre-ordering.
Hold on. We'll do it on the air.
Okay. Love this song.
This is Heather's song.
Oh, totally. Oh, my God.
Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Nathan Staten, our fabulous musical director, picking music to make Heather happy. And I'm all for that. The Go-Go's. So we have a listener who couldn't get on the phone, but he did telegraph you, Heather, with his thinking. Now, this isn't Apple's thinking, but his thinking as to why Apple is not letting you pre-order the iPhone 5S. You can currently pre-order the 5C and have it delivered to you on September 20th, but you cannot do that with a 5S. You must go into an Apple store or a phone store. Why?
I don't know where he heard this, actually, but he says they need the customer in person so they can show them how to operate the fingerprint reader. This way they don't get bad PR from press, that's redundant, from customers who are tech challenged and report to the world the fingerprint reader sucks because they didn't know how to use it. It'll also prevent tons of tech calls later on asking how the fingerprint reader works. That's from Luke.
That's an interesting thought. I mean, it certainly is a technology people aren't familiar with. I've seen the training involved, and they've done a good job, I think, of on-screen explaining. You need to do it several times, and what they show is a fingerprint, and as you repeat the thumb press, it shows the ridges slowly filling in. Our correspondent, Andy Anako, who works on our MacBreak Weekly show and was at the event and played with the 5S, said that it's hard to remember not to push it in, because if you push it in all the way, it acts as the home button and pulls you out of the fingerprint setup. So it's conceivable, but I have to say... If Apple's position is that this fingerprint reader is so hard, we have to teach you how to use it, they're going to have a problem. They can't, nothing, this is, by the way, this happens to me all the time. When a company has a new product, they very often say, well, let us sit down and teach you how to use it. Because they want some face time. They want to woo me and convince me of what a great product it is. And what I always respond to them is, no, I prefer to experience it the same way a normal consumer would. Without any hand-holding, I want to know if it's possible for somebody with normal intelligence to figure it out. And I think it's pretty clear that if Apple really thinks that the fingerprint reader, you have to be trained to use the fingerprint reader, that's going to be a flop. Because, yes, initially on the first day people will come into the store, but you can then order it after that. They're not making everybody who buys the phone come into the store, only if you want the phone on day one. You know what's interesting? I think you could make a strong case that the 5C, the color one, was going to outsell the 5S. I bet you that's Apple's expectation. Not merely because of the lower price, but because people want a color phone. And I don't think people are that excited about the fingerprint reader. I didn't mention one other feature of the new iPhone that people probably will be interested in, and that is a somewhat improved camera. F2.2 means it's faster in low light. It has bigger pixels. They've increased the size of the sensor. That means also better low light performance. And the biggest difference you'll notice immediately is instead of one LED flash, it has two. And they've done something nobody else has done. It's quite brilliant, I think. The LED flashes have two different colors. One's bluer, one's yellower. Of course, a blue flash is better outdoors, a yellow flash indoors. It wants to match the color temperature of the room you're in. So what the flash does, now you may initially, this may be disconcerting, is it flashes twice. The first time it flashes to see what the color temperature is of the room. Or maybe it doesn't flash, maybe it just takes a picture. I'm not sure how it works. But what I read was it flashes once to get the color temperature of the room and then adjusts itself to match. one of 1,000 different possibilities using different levels of those two flashes. That means, and this is true, that would really improve how a flash works. You know, there are a number of problems with on-camera flash. One of them is that it always, you know, washes everything out. It's so bright. Partly that's because it's not matching the color of the room. We'll see. The pictures I've seen, but they all come from Apple, are look pretty good. So, you know, there you have it. That's an interesting rationale. It may actually be the rationale that Apple's thinking, the reason Apple's thinking of forcing you to come in. But it only will hold for the first day because I can pre-order on the 20th and get it on the 22nd or 23rd. I don't have to go to the store to get it, right? By the way, and this is an interesting story. Tech Talk from KFGO is in our chat room. He says, Apple failed to create excitement for the 5C because while the iPhone 5 pre-orders sold out in under an hour last year, you can still go to Apple's website right now and order a 5C in any color you want, in any memory size you want, for any carrier you want, and it will still ship on the official release date. In other words, they're not selling out in any model. Now, that could also mean Apple's made more. Apple doesn't reveal that at all. But it's good news if you want to get a 5C. You can go to the website right now and buy one and have it on the 20th and not have to get in line and get trained on how to use a fingerprint reader. Coming up, we're going to talk to Milena in St. George, Utah. She wants to know if she should buy an extended warranty on her new phone. That's a great question. Back to the phones we go. Milena, St. George, Utah. Hi, Milena. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. So great to be on the show.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I was calling because I'm ready to upgrade my phone. I've been waiting, you know, for a couple months for the new iPhone. And my question is, well, let me tell you first. The iPhone that I have now is the 4S, and it had an unfortunate accident one time.
They always do.
So, yeah. And it fell into the icy, cool water of this cooler we had at a picnic. And so, yeah, it went through the rise and all of that good stuff. And because Apple Care wouldn't cover my submersion.
That's right. That's right. So, they have a new kind of Apple Care. Their old Apple Care didn't cover damage. Accidental damage. The new Apple Care does. It's called Apple Care Plus. It's not cheap. It's $100, and you might. And it's not cheap in another respect. You can only call on it for 2 years, and you can only cover. It only covers two incidents. You know, and you have to pay $79 each time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's kind of pricey.
So let's say you break your phone once in the first 2 years. You've paid $179 for the replacement. And if Apple's nice, they'll give it. How much did they charge you for your 4S after you dunked it?
Well, they didn't because I did the rise and it started working.
Oh, all right.
Again, and
good.
So it works.
They, in many cases, they'll give you a new one for $200.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't even try. I said, well, you know, it's working, so.
I think a lot of times with extended warranties in general, these are profit centers for the companies. You're basically buying insurance. And, you know, those big insurance buildings you see downtown, those weren't built because they're losing money. Insurance is a profit center. And so Apple's selling you insurance or Best Buy selling you insurance, Square Trade, whoever it is making money on it. But the nice thing is if you have an accident, you don't have to worry about it. It's kind of no sweat.
Which leads me to the question, so what do you recommend? Like, what's the best insurance I...
Well, I'll tell you, I never buy Apple Care because I'm not typical, but I figure I'll self-insure. It'll be cheaper over the lifetime of my phone purchasing. But if you're the kind of person that, you know, has trouble with your phones a lot, it might be worth it just for the peace of mind. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, Hour 3 of the Tech Guy Extravaganza, in which we talk about computers and smartphones and home theater. We talk about the new iPhones, for instance. We talk about big screen TVs, surround sound, GPS, all that jazz, anything with a chip in it. 8888, Ask Leo is the number, 888-827-9936, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. 55, why say 99? I don't know, 5536. Just remember 8888 Ask Leo. Think of Think of Liberace at one keyboard playing the piano. That's 88 keys. And then Lawrence Welk at the other keyboard. Actually, he plays the accordion. I don't know how many keys are in the accordion. Don't think of Lawrence Welk. Think of Leather and Liberace playing at the keyboard. That's another 88 keys. 88, 88. But then all of a sudden they have a problem with their computer and they ask Leo, 88, 88, ask Leo. Have I painted a picture in your mind? You'll never forget that number again. Ever again.
That picture is on acid.
There's something really wrong with that one. Somebody, and the Sue and the writer in our chat room says, it sounds like it's an episode of Alice's Restaurant. I'm starting to... And then you took the garbage and they poured the garbage down. So that chat room, you can get to there too if you go to our website. This is another thing to remember. Actually, if you remember this only, everything's there, including the 8888 Ask Leo. The website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And there we have a link to not only the phone number, but also to our chat room, which is always a wonderful place. Hundreds of people in there having fun, talking. We also have links there to the shows, audio and video from prior shows. Our show notes, so if I mention a website or talk about an article, it'll all be there. It'll be linked there in the show notes, thanks to James DeRuvo. Thank you, James, writing everything down as I talk. Then we clean that up. We polish that up. And add it. When we add the audio and video, we actually do it question by question. So you can jump to a specific question and then hear the audio and video or watch the video answer. And then, really important, and I mention this a lot, and I'm absolutely sincere, I would love it if you have a better idea or a suggestion or a comment to add that after the questions, just type in the comment box. That way, over time, I think this can become a really valuable resource of questions and answers. And you have my pledge, always free, always available, always open. We make plenty of money from our fabulous advertisers and from your support of our fabulous advertisers. So I don't need to charge you for the podcasts or the downloads or the access to the website or any of that. TechGuyLabs.com. Douglas, Asheville, North Carolina, you're next. Welcome. Leo Laporte, hey, the tech guy. Hi. Yeah,
thank you for taking my call, Leo.
My pleasure.
I will never forget that phone number. Unfortunately, I've got my own images from that.
You got Lawrence Welk. Yeah, Liberace playing on the keyboard. Yeah, I think that's good. Now I'll remember it anyway.
Right. Y'all were talking about ringtones a little while ago, and I meant to mention before, you gave me some great ideas while I was on hold. One of them would be get some, I can't think of his name now, but some of the, I don't know what you call them, the actual artists from the 80s, some of the, it'll hit me.
It went right out of your head, didn't it?
Right out of my head.
Never happens to me. Right. Except all the time.
The reason I'm calling is, I have an LG P509.
Okay.
And an old LG Optimus. I'm having to fall back on it for the time being because, my phone I normally use is giving me some issues, so at least I've got backup. I'm thankful for that. The problem I'm running into is anytime I put on there some apps I want to use, there's so many of the apps that it came with that there's no room for stuff I want.
Yeah, that's a real problem nowadays. That phone isn't super old; it's only a couple of years old.
But it
isn't exactly a high end. Phone, and it doesn't, and this is the big problem for you, use the latest Android. It's using Froyo 2.2, and the problem with that is more recent versions of Android will let you move apps to the SD card. You can put an SD card in there, but it only has 2 gigs of... Yeah, but apps can't live there unless the operating system supports it.
Right, I have some in there.
Okay.
But a lot of apps that I normally use are streaming audio apps, and they like to stay on the phone natively. They won't
Anything with a widget, moving apps to the SD card is always a little dicey. And you only have 2 gigs of memory on this phone. That really is not a lot.
This is the older Optimus T. It's about a 3-year-old phone, so I don't even have that much.
Yeah, I think it's time. If you can afford it, I think it'd be time to get a new phone.
That's what I'm in the process of doing. Until I do, though, I was wondering, and I'm not sure how well I could use the terminal on a phone with a screen this small, but what is the best way to root this phone to get off the stuff I don't want, like Facebook?
That's a good idea. Yeah, if at least you can do that. In fact, that'll give you, after you root it, you can then put a new ROM on there and get you up to a more modern system version of Android, which would really help. So that's not 2 gigs of memory, by the way, 2 gigs of storage, 2 gigs of RAM. That's 2 gigs of storage. It's not a lot of space. RAM, it probably is 512 megs at best. So here's the deal. Yeah, here's the deal. Go to xda-developers.com. This is a forum, really great site for people who are into Android phones. And if you type in your device on there, the Optimus, what was it, the LGT?
The Optimus T, it's also known as the P509.
P509, all right. If you type that in and you search for that device, that's where you'll get the forum posts on how you can root it. And follow those instructions carefully. It's not dangerous to root a phone if you follow the instructions to a T. Where people get in trouble is where they take shortcuts or they don't read carefully and they leave out a step or they do the wrong thing. And then you can actually turn that phone into a brick.
Oh, and one last thing before I go. It just hit me who I was trying to think of. Brian Eno. Find some good Brian Eno, put on your phone. That will make for a really interesting read.
I love Brian Eno. I've interviewed him. He's an amazing fella, and I agree 100%. Now, you're not thinking the ambient stuff like music for airports. That would be too boring and slow. You're talking about Babies on Fire, something like that.
Right.
Early Eno.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was showing Heather my longtime ringtone is by a band he was in, Roxy Music. He wasn't in Roxy when they did the album that I use, Avalon, but some good stuff. I agree. Eno was one of the first to really use synthesizers. In fact, he's still kind of known as the king of the Roland. He could program a Roland synthesizer better than any human alive. Let me tell you what rooting is, but we use that term a lot, and it probably should explain it to you. It means really not modifying the phone particularly, but just giving yourself full administrative access to the files on the phone. Android phones do not come with root permissions, with administrator permissions, nor do iPhones. In fact, no phone comes with administrator permissions because it's dangerous. You can do things to the phone that make it unusable after you root it. But if you are smart enough to root it, you generally it's accepted that, well, you must know what you're doing, so go have at it. Rooting isn't that hard. It just gives you permission to do more on that phone, including things like deleting programs you don't want, the bloatware that they put on these phones. And Google's position on rooting is, please do. Android is designed to be rooted. But that's not the case for all carriers or all manufacturers. So some are not so lenient. We just got word actually yesterday that Motorola has decided to allow you to root. Actually, it's a program called Moto Root that allows you to root the Moto X, the Droid Max, Ultra, and Mini, the newest ones. Motorola has already said that we're going to give you a boot unlocker that will allow you to do this officially. But again, they don't like you to do it unless you know what you're doing. You know, it's on you at this point. I always root my phones. I like it. I love the power. 8888 Ask Leah, more of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. On to the show we go. And Sumana in Ensenada, California. Is that how you say it? Sunana?
It's Sunana.
Hi, Sunana. Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm excellent. It's always so excellent to talk to you. You're my go-to guy, and I've got a really important question for you today.
Okay. Yes, I will marry you. No, that's wrong. That's the wrong question. What can I do? What can I do for you? Sunana fell off her seat on that one.
This is something you probably don't even know about.
Yes.
The University of Colorado at Boulder, where
my son is. Yes.
But there is a really great nonprofit base there called the National Center for Women in Technology.
I didn't know that. That's great.
Yes, they're based there at the Atlas Institute. And they have this award called the Aspirations in Computing Award, where this past year, like, they gave 800 girls, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade girls, new laptops, and they treat them like a rock star, and then they hook them up with internships at Google.
That is great.
Like, all these great places. And it's all about, you know, building a pipeline for talent in the tech community made of women.
This is something so important because, you know, it's just recently there was an issue with a programmer, actually the chief technical officer at a big company. He called himself a brogrammer.
I know all
And
about
it
that,
was horrible. I mean, the guy was just a sexist, a misogynist, a pig, and he was tweeting it nonstop. Fortunately, they fired him. But it just it showed how endemic this is in the tech industry, that women are just kind of second class citizens. A lot of geeks think that women cannot be technical, and that's so wrong. We know it's wrong.
Right. And so they're all about trying to create a good atmosphere for them. And the reason I'm calling you is because they are launching their 2014 award tomorrow, their Aspirations in Computing Award, and this year they're going to be, you know, looking to award about 1,000 girls, but 35 of them are all going to get a $1,000 scholarship each, you know, plus laptops and prizes and everything else they get. But it's a big launch. And I have been researching tech reporters and writers that cover basically, you know, technology focused on the nexus of women in tech.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there's a bunch of them, but they're all at publications that, you know, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade girls aren't reading.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, who is a technology writer that writes about these things, but is more mainstream media? And I thought, I'll have to ask Leo.
There are quite a few that I think would be good to approach. And certainly I will send me an email, will you? And I will be glad to help out as best I can, even if it's just with money. Because this is a great cause, and I truly believe in it. But I do think there are mainstream reporters, and there are many women reporters who would, girls in high school would read, but B, would also make excellent role models.
Right.
So send me an email, and I'll give you a list. I mean, I'm off the top of my head, of course, the first people you think of, the people in mainstream press, like David Pogue at the New York Times, Ed Begg at the Wall Street Journal. Walt Mossberg's been really great in fostering women reporters, both at the Wall Street Journal and at his website, All Things D. There's, of course, Kara Swisher, who is one of his best writers. She's phenomenal and a great role model. Role model. Jessica Lessen, who used to be one of the best reporters at the Wall Street Journal, has left to start her own business. I'm trying to think. Oh, Joanna Stern at ABC. Thank you, chat room. That is a great suggestion. I know Joanna well. She is former CNET reporter who went to ABC as their technology reporter and really is a great role model, I think, for young women. Very smart. And because she's on mainstream, you know, on a network broadcast, I think that probably means she is very visible among the high school age group. I mean, high schoolers don't watch TV. You know, the truth is, you know, who you should probably talk to is the YouTube stars like Justine Azarek. Because Justine is somebody that high school girls are probably very aware of, who is a really successful woman. But it's on YouTube. It's not on traditional mainstream media.
Right. Okay.
I think this is great. I'm glad I can help you out. It's ncwit.org if you want to learn more about it. And it's the Aspirations in Computing Talent Development Initiative.
That's right.
I think that's just a great. I'm really glad to talk to you. And
thank you, Leo. You're always a wealth of insight. Yeah. I appreciate it.
I think, you know, from the point of view even of the programmer, wouldn't it be better if it weren't a male-dominated field? Wouldn't it be better if there were more women involved? And I'm not talking getting you coffee. I'm talking programming across the table from you, doing serious tech work. And there are a lot of them. I know so many of them. I think of Adafruit Industries, which is a wonderful place to go buy projects like the Raspberry Pi and things like that that you can learn and build. And that's run by a wonderful, talented woman, Lady Ada, a very successful business for her, but she is a great inspiration. She actually does a podcast out of Adafruit Industries called Meet the Engineers or Talk to the Engineers, and it's a panel of women engineers answering questions about how to build the projects on Adafruit, which I think is fabulous. I think it's fabulous. So there'll be another great person to talk to. I can actually go on and on. Limor Fried, Lady Ada, was a MIT graduate who is really one of the leaders of the do-it-yourself revolution and is very inspiring. She's in New York City. But I would think that any high school age girl would be very inspired by Lee Moore's role model. Some great people out there. And then you hear about these people like Pax Dickinson, the programmer. And it just really, it's saddening, frankly. Saddening. You know, the early computer operators, by the way, were all women. They were all women in the earliest days of computing. The calculators. Monroe in should I not take Monroe? All right, I'll take Deborah in Santa Clarita, California. Hi, Deborah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, Leo, thank you. I so need a pro today.
All right.
My internet connection is wireless, and every now and then it goes away. I can't connect, and I'm having a problem, although it shows green and connected. So then I go to my start, and I go up to network connections, and I look at it, and I see besides my wireless connection 3 is called, there's something beneath that called internet connection.
Hmm.
And it's taking up everything. It's getting, you know, up to a gig.
Ah, interesting.
Is that
a neighbor? Are you in a population dense area?
Yes.
Might be another person's Wi-Fi access spot. Coming through the walls. You think so?
It doesn't show up when I look at all my wireless that are available. Those are all very distant and faint, you know.
You need a wireless expert. This is a very complicated thing, and I'm not sure what's going on. I'm sorry to say. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's so many things this could be. I just don't know what it is. This is a hard one for me. Yeah, F and Dunn, would you go over to her house? Because I have no idea what's going on over there. And it's just something that I can't probably diagnose over the phone. She's not connecting to her own connection. Is that it? It's possible. It could be that she has a dual band router with different names of each. I have that problem. I have a 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz band, and they both have the same name. I'm not sure what exactly was going on, and I just don't, unfortunately, have time. I had to take a break. So, Deborah, if you don't know what, if you're still listening, you could try our chat room. They have some ideas for you. It's one of those things where what would really be best is to get somebody who knows what they're doing to come over with a Wi-Fi analyzer to see what's going on. Oh, tech engineer, yes. So here's the deal. We'll be in Venice. We arrive in Venice on Wednesday. We're staying at the Hotel Luna Baglioni. We will be there till we leave on the boat on Sunday. I wasn't planning a Venice meetup. Not Venice, California, no. Venice, Venezia, Italia, in the Veneto. Maybe we should do a little meetup. I'll take some time to be available at a bar. Maybe we'll all meet at Harry's Bar. How about Thursday night at Harry's Bar? No? Lisa says we're not allowed to work.
No.
Oh, sorry. Never mind. I am not in Venice next week. You're right. I shouldn't be doing that. I'm sorry. We wanted to get together.
No. You are exclusively mine.
I live for my fans, but I live more for you, so all right.
For 3 weeks, guys. We're on vacation.
She says for 3 weeks. No work, no meetups. But Harry's Bar is nice. The chat room is pretty much supportive.
I rarely put my foot down. I'm putting it down this one time.
other than that, Leo gets to do whatever he wants.
Okay. I love you.
Stop saying.
All right. Sorry, tech engineer. But if you happen to be at the... No. Okay, never mind. I got put in my place, huh? Actually, I'm fine. It's a good idea. Just like, it's vacation. Hotel Danieli in the lobby bar. Is that a good one, Murray? All right, we'll go there. Somebody told us that the restaurant we should go to is La Caravello. It's in the Saturnia Hotel down the street. Murray, you got a recommendation for a good restaurant? Oh, Murray, I'm not thinking about money, which is like... I think that's right, Atort, but... Aw, Jennifer, did you see that? Mike's loves Jen, and he's wishing you a happy 5th anniversary. Aw. Is she in the other room in chat? Really? There are no bad restaurants? That's probably true. They're bad restaurants. There's a Burger King in Venice. Dee 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 dee. Dee dee dee. I know. I'm so bad. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Stamps.com. Why go to the post office when you could print your own U.S. postage from your computer and your printer? You don't need a postage meter. You don't need special inks. You just need Stamps.com for our no-risk trial offer. Visit Stamps.com. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and use my name, Leo. Stamps.com. We were talking with Deborah about her Wi-Fi issue. And I'm afraid it's just too complicated, Deborah, for me to diagnose over the phone. Wi-Fi is tricky. And it could be all sorts of things. And unfortunately, there are a lot of devices along the chain that can go wrong. There's, of course, your internet service provider itself. There's the router that you're using. Frequently resetting that or unplugging it and plugging it back in will fix problems. And then there's the computer itself. And at any point along the way, there can be interference. There can be all sorts of problems. There can be other Wi-Fi signals with similar names. F and Dunn's in the same area as you are. She says the Geek Squad at Best Buy is pretty good. They could come in and probably fix it. I tell you, we have a full-time practically engineer here who's our network specialist. I've talked about Russell before. He's brilliant. And he's spent a lot of time getting our Wi-Fi working in this building, and it's still not perfect just because there's so many people using it, so many signals, and it's just tough. Radio technology is a dark art, says William Becker, and he's absolutely right. Let's go to Juan in L.A., Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Juan.
Hey, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. I really, really appreciate this. Long time listener to the show.
Thank you.
A couple of months ago, my hard drive from desktop went out. The information was backed up, but someone in my household unfortunately deleted that, so therefore being able to not share backup with someone else.
They deleted your backup? Ugh.
Yeah, they. You know,
what's this file? I don't need this.
Yeah, tell me about it. It was painful. But here's what I found on the hard drive. I'm getting a message, and it's called a data error cycle redundancy check.
Oh, CRC error. Okay.
So my question to you is that a fatal error?
No.
No way to recover it? Help
Not necessarily. So there are two different categories of hard drive errors. There's physical errors and there's soft errors. CRC error could be a symptom of a physical error, or it could be purely a soft error. A physical error is there's a gouge on the disk, or the head is, you know, misaligned, or usually physical errors mean the hard drive doesn't work at all. It means, you know, maybe the circuit board is blown or whatever. Those are expensive to fix, frankly. Soft errors, not so expensive, not even so dramatically a problem. CRC is the cyclic redundancy check. It's a a check to make sure that the data that you're reading or the integrity is there, that it's not damaged. If it fails a CRC error, that means something's gone wrong and it can't, you can't trust what I'm reading. And in fact, most hard drives, if they get a CRC error, will just stop. Could just be a bit was switched by accident on the hard drive, and that's an easy thing to fix. Chances are a CRC error is not a hardware error. It could be, though, because what we don't know is what's causing it. Of course, if you desperately need the disk fixed, you could bring it to an expert. You might be able to do this yourself with a program called SpinRite. And I think this is a great candidate for SpinRite, probably. What SpinRite does is it finds sectors that are hard to read or are giving poor readings, tries to get the data off, moves it, and then marks that sector unusable and goes through the whole hard drive and does that. Sometimes it could take a long time, days sometimes, maybe weeks. probably not weeks. SpinRite's available from grc.com. It's not inexpensive. It's about $80, which is the price of a new hard drive. So if you have a, you said you don't have a backup. If you had a backup, I'd say don't even bother. Just get a new hard drive. But if you really want to get those files back, you got to figure out, you know, what's wrong and move the data off of that. So I would suggest SpinRite or bring it to a shop where the person will probably use SpinRite, frankly. SpinRite is non-destructive. It goes independent of file system, independent of operating system. It just looks at the disk and goes step by step through the disk, looking for sectors it can't read, reading them until, you know, and this is where the reason it succeeds is the operating system, after 20 or 30 reads, it just goes, I can't read this, and gives up. SpinRite never gives up. Just keeps trying until it gets the data and moves it. And I'm sorry this happened to you. That's the best advice I can give. You probably don't need to spend the thousands of dollars you'd have to spend to get a hardware fix. That's places like Drive Savers, where you send it them. They have a guy in a bunny suit in a clean room. He disassembles a drive, replaces broken components, puts it back together again. Or, worst case scenario, takes the platters out of the old drive, puts it in an identical new drive, puts it back together. It has to be done in a clean room. That's why it's $5,000.
Yes, indeed.
Rutherford, New Jersey. Hello, Monroe.
Hey there, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. Welcome.
Thanks. Actually, I got onto your program because I was looking for some other problem on a back one, then I came up with this one.
Hey.
So perfect, and I've enjoyed listening to all the stuff you don't hear on the other side. Anyway,
won't. No, they don't get geeky on the other one. No,
don't do that. Anyway, I've got this MacBook Pro. It's just a little over 2 years old. It's got the 4 gig RAM.
Yeah.
And I get the occasional spinning beach ball of death, the occasional blue screen. And I'm just thinking, because it's only got 4, and I can now upgrade to 16, it's not outrageously expensive. We're talking about $140 or so. What sort of improvement would I see if I did that?
The beach ball usually is not because of a lack of RAM. 4 gigs is not a huge amount, but it's usually enough on a Macintosh. Beach balls usually have to do more with software issues, software errors. You might get better results just reinstalling, wiping the hard drive, reinstalling OS X. Are you using the most recent OS X?
No, I'm still back on 10.6 Snow Leopard. It worked. I'm happy with it.
I would upgrade to Mountain Lion. That will fix a lot of woes. Yes.
Well, I've been reading some things, both sides, negative, positive.
RAM, you know, 4 gigs. So what happens with RAM is there's kind of the optimal amount, and then there's a slight improvement with increases above that optimal amount. But if you were to make a line graph of speed improvement for RAM, it's steep, steep, steep up to about 4 gigs, and then it flattens out. It gets a little bit better with 8, a little bit better with 16. A lot of this is dependent on how much or what you're doing. If you're using, do you use Photoshop?
No.
What do you use?
Well, I'm basically online. I have a job where I have to go online, so I'm looking at things like Google Maps and other things.
That's the 4 gigs is plenty.
Occasionally,
4 gigs is plenty. I think the beach ball is software. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Last segment of the day, and that means it's time for Dickie D. Our gizwiz, our gadget hound, Dick DiBartolo's Mad Magazine's maddest writer for the last 5 decades or so, and also a gadget nut. Hi, Dick.
Leo, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
So you're going on like some kind of trip or something?
I'm going far, far away from you, buddy boy. Going to Italy, the motherland, the home country.
Wow.
I'm going to Greece. I'm going to Turkey. All that stuff.
All right. Yeah, it would be better just to have paid your taxes, but that's fine.
Not cheaper, but better.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So you got something for us today?
Yeah, you know what? We're just going to do a bare bones cheapo. We're talking under $5 gadget that I am using and liking. And, you know, like the Vavood wind machine. I happen to love the name of this gadget. This is the Mogo 2Go mini wallet. So the Mogo 2Go is a little guy that uses 3M adhesive to go on the back of your phone. It's a tiny little pocket, can hold a couple of credit cards, maybe your hotel key or your hotel key and some folding money. But it's great if you want to go out like to the beach or something. You want to have your phone with you, but you don't want to bring a wallet with you. So this is an easy way to carry some very small things. It's $495, including shipping.
Oh, it's cheap.
It's cheap, yeah.
Because I have the Ninja wallet, which is like $19.
Yeah, I think that's almost $20, like $19.95. Yeah. Comes in black or white. And strangely, I don't know why they did this. It says, you know, fits the iPhone 5 and the Galaxy 4. But then further on, it says, or any smartphone that has a flat back. And you need a little bit of a very small area, about 2.25 by 3.75. And with all these wallets, you have to be careful when you put them on. You don't cover the flash. You don't cover the mic. You don't cover the speaker. But the Mogo 2Go on the Galaxy 4 clears the speaker and just comes under the flash. And even with a credit card, I actually keep business cards in mine, it doesn't block the flash at all.
Yeah, and you know, you might look at this and say, oh, how secure can this be with your credit cards, your wallet, your cash in it? It's at least the Card Ninja, which I've used, and the Shinjimura, which is the same idea. It's stretchy fabric that really is quite grippy, and stuff doesn't seem to fall out.
Yeah, no, nothing has fallen out that I know of, because it would be if it fell out, it would be in my pocket.
One thing I should point out, if you can rip it, so it wears out eventually, but at $5, big deal. Big deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you change your mind, the company says it comes back off again without leaving any sort of residue on your phone.
I haven't tried the Mogo 2Go. I have tried the Ninja Card Ninja, and I love it.
Have you tried the Fufu to carry?
No, but I got the Poo-Poo Not Now New, but later. Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Dick, if you go to gizwiz.biz right now, that's his website, gizwiz.biz,
you're getting out just in time.
You will find the What the Heck Is It game. What the heck is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I wonder myself.
Okay, you scroll down here, and there's a button, big button. What the heck is it?
I go into a warehouse, and I take a camera, and I close my eyes.
Yes.
Films.
I believe
and I
that's
put it
a
on the web.
Prosthetic tongue, if I'm not mistaken. But
could
who knows?
Be.
Who knows?
It could be.
For the tongue impaired. You can scroll down and see previous What the Heck Is It contest games and winners. A point being that it's not the right answer that is most likely to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. He does have 12 for the right answer. It's the crazy wrong answer that really wins Dick's heart.
Yes.
So exactly. So get creative and get to gizwiz.biz. You have to the Halloween, to the end of October, to play the game. That's a I know what that is. That's a replacement tongue for when you left your last tongue in your cheek.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. All right, Dick, stick around. We're going to do some giz fizzing right after the radio show. Before we do that, I will take a call or two more. We got Gail and Covina, and she wants to know how many G's for a new iPhone. I think they must be missing something there. 1,000 G's. All right, let's see what's going on with Gail in Covina, California. Hi, Gail. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I would like to go to Harry's Bar.
Yeah.
It's
Let's go have Bellinis in Venice. Why not?
That sounds great. In the meantime, here's my question that I don't hear too many people ask about. And I listen all the time.
Good.
With this new iPhone, I have a, unlike Heather, I've got a 4. So mine is pretty archaic.
It's time, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm looking at the 5S. And, you know, how many gigabytes? My husband is
the type that feels like
more is better.
Yeah, so, and that's not necessarily true. They have 16, 32, and 64. And each step up is another $100.
Yeah.
Which is not a lot of money, but it is a little pricey for what you're getting.
Right.
I used to say buy the biggest because we were storing our music and our pictures and lots of apps. But what I've noticed is that more and more I stream music. I don't necessarily keep all my pictures on there. My need for storage has gone down. Well, how big is your iPhone 4?
My iPhone 4 was the biggest at the time, 16.
And you've survived?
And I've survived.
Have you gotten to the point where you have to delete stuff because you run out of room?
No, and I have a gazillion photos. I don't have the music. I don't see that I will.
It's really photos, it's media files that take up the biggest space.
Yeah, and I never thought I'd have all those apps, but guess what? I do.
Well, you know, if you go to your settings in the general tab, there's a usage item. Look at that and see how much space is left,
mm-hmm.
how much space you've used for apps, for photos, and so forth. 16, if you got by with 16, you should get by with 16 now. Maybe you want to get 32 just to be safe. I think there's very few people who need 64 anymore. And I even have a 64 gig iPhone 5. Never came close to filling it up.
Okay, great. That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's your husband has one point, which is you can't upgrade it. So you got to kind of make the best guess you can now.
Yes.
You're stuck with it for 2 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this case, 64 gigs is probably overkill. So 32, maybe, if you feel like you might want to have lots of photos on it.
Mm-hmm.
But especially since you don't put music on it, I wouldn't worry about it. 16 is probably fine. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Have fun on your trip.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We're going to have all new shows for you all the next 3 weeks. We've recorded ahead of time, and there's lots of great content, so don't feel like you're going to miss anything. I'm going to miss you, though. We do have another show this weekend, so there is more to come. But I will be taking off on Tuesday for a much-needed vacation. Aren't all vacations much-needed? Has there ever been a vacation? I don't really need a vacation. I guess I'll take one. No, they're always much needed. I'm only a little sad because I'm leaving before the iPhone 5S comes out. I would have loved to take it with me, but I'll just have to have it waiting when I get back. Heather Hammond, thanks for your help today. You're the best. Thanks to Nathan and everybody for listening. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.